How have you not seen this?
Seen this. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today, I'm joined by guest host, Nathan Tillis.
Hey. Hi. I'm Nathan.
And our special guest, Mike Linsky.
Hello.
And we just watched Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, we did.
Tarantino's big old sprawling epic World War II movie that plays out like the Wild Bunch, but with Nazis. It's a pretty fun little ride. Definitely one of his better films. Currently, probably my favorite.
Really?
Still, I think. Yeah.
Did you see Django?
Yeah, I did. And I went back and forth on Django and Bastards a lot.
Yeah.
And I think Bastards is just paced better, I think, for me. And I love both of those movies. And for a long time, I really did go back and forth. But I think at the end of the day, I do think my heart goes to Bastards out of all of it. And Nathan is guest hosting this. He specifically requested this movie to host since he's also participating in Struck a Nerve pop culture mixtape this month. So, is there anything you'd like to say about the film? Why is this one so high up there for you?
It's very long, and I like really long movies, first of all.
Okay.
Now,
so you're playing Terrence Malick.
I like it. It's very violent, but at the same time, there's a lot of really like beautiful scenes inside of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, even when it does get really violent, there's still really beautiful shots inside those violent shots.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A violent poetry, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool. Alright. So, Mike, knowing all those things, how have you not seen this?
I was working at a movie theater while it came out. I don't know how I haven't seen it. And a friend actually just, he tried to show me it, and I fell asleep in that first scene.
Oh, that first scene is so good.
That's the best scene. It's like, wait, it's gonna get... Just wait until this drops, wait. And then I was just went Napland, and I took a nap instead.
You didn't wait until it dropped?
I just fell asleep.
It's like falling asleep for the interesting part of the dubstep song.
You gotta listen to your friends.
Wait for it to build.
So you worked at a... Like, did you just... not get around to it?
I did not get around
to it. I worked at a theater when Django came out, and I saw it three times. Like, in the same week.
Yeah, well, and I like Tarantino a lot, too, and I just never got around to seeing this one.
Oh, man.
That's how, I just never did.
Well, now that you've managed to stay awake through that first scene and the subsequent scenes, what did you think?
I think it was really good. That was, it wouldn't be my favorite.
Okay.
I like Kill Bill. That's got a special place.
Kill Bill's definitely very good.
That's my number one. The volume one would be, hands down, favorite Tarantino one. But, like you said, like a lot of beautiful, like, it's built so beautifully, and then it's just like, all right, now let's get shit crazy.
Yeah.
There are lots of beautiful shots in there. I enjoyed it.
Good.
Two thumbs up.
Yeah, glad to hear it.
Three.
Let's talk about that first scene. Let's just work through the movie.
Yeah.
That first scene is so goddamn tense.
Yeah.
Like Tarantino, like, and we talked about this on a couple of the other episodes with a couple of his other films. Tarantino is solid at getting your attention right out the gate.
Yeah.
Like, we're gonna discount the time you fell asleep.
Yeah. Well, it just starts with the misspelling, and I just checked out.
Yeah, it's like, Tarantino, it's called spell check. You're rich, you can afford it. I'm out.
I checked the subtitles.
I'm over this.
They were good.
What's this David Fincher 7, but with a 7 instead of a V? Fuck you.
No.
I'm going to bed.
Number lucky number 11?
Yeah.
That's not a number.
That's not even a name. This is silly. I'm checking out.
No, that's definitely a great action opener to open the movie, even though it's not really action-packed whatsoever.
Yeah,
except
not at
for
all.
The one part, but...
Yeah, well, just the tension of that scene builds
so
well.
And I was not expecting that of a director like Quentin Tarantino, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first time I've really seen one of his movies where it's, like, palpably tense. You can feel it as it's happening. You feel like you're the farmer sitting down at the table when it's happening.
When you genuinely, you don't know which way that scene is going to go.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know if it's going to end with the farmer and his... Like, you don't know if it's going to end with, like, his soldiers walking in and him stepping outside to find his daughters have been, like, garroted or something.
Yeah,
I don't think he has ever done a more tense scene than the opening of this film.
Yeah.
And he's, like, and that's not to discredit him as a writer or director at all, because, like, he's written some very great scenes and some very great movies, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But just the opening of this movie is just so fucking good.
It's definitely a testament to his range.
Yeah.
Even though people say that he doesn't have a lot of range and he borrows heavily from other genres, which I don't disagree with.
Yeah. But he also, like, but he does that in a way that's interesting, too.
Yeah.
Like,
for sure.
And that's and it's not like he sits there and denies it.
No.
Like all he does in interviews is talk about the movies that he loves.
He embraces
and
it, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I would much rather that than, like, him to do... to say, make something like Kill Bill and be like, what's a Sergio Leone movie? I've never heard of this guy. Fistful of Dollars, what's that?
Yeah.
Like, he's very openly, like I said, he embraces that.
Mm.
And that opening scene is like 15, 20 minutes long. And most of it is fucking Hans Landa, fucking Christoph Waltz, who's so good in this movie, sitting at a table and making small talk for like 6 minutes, like talking about how good his fucking milk is. before, like, it gets to the point where you're like, alright, well, now we know what's going on. Like, where is this going from here?
Yeah. And I've seen this movie, like, 4 or 5 times at this point. And Danny Stratton.
Yeah.
He told me that he's seen it a couple times, and he noticed that the way that Christoph Waltz plays it is the character already knows they're under the floorboards the entire time. And you can see it in his face from the very beginning that he knows.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just really interesting to watch it again and notice, like, the subtle things that he does with his character while that scene is going on, you know?
It's just teasing on the entire
thing. Yeah.
Yeah, like, very cat and mouse thing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
sure.
It's... Yeah, and that's part of what makes it so tense, too. Like, it's... Because, for example, it's a different kind of tension than, say, the scene in the basement bar later on in the movie with Michael Fassbender and August Diehl's characters kind of squaring off. Because, like, that tension's there when they doubt, like, that he's a German officer, but then, like...
It pulls back a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And he, like, August Diehl's character, the other captain that, intervenes with the beer...
I was
the
hiding
full of beer.
The whole time.
Yeah. Like...
Your jig is up. That was a quote from the movie, I remember.
Yep. The jig is up! I'm going to drink from my beer boots. But, yeah, like, he doesn't know, he suspects.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, looking at his character in the basement scene, and then Hans Landa at the top, like, was, like, very sure of himself, like, very confident. From the moment he walks in that door, he's like, I'm going to make with the niceties first, and then get down to brass tacks.
Just toy with you a little bit.
Yeah, after having some of this delicious milk.
He does the same thing in a later scene where he sits down with Shoshana.
Yes, oh my god.
He orders a glass of milk for her. And when I first saw that, I was like, the first time I saw the movie, I was like, holy shit.
Does he know? Yeah.
He's gonna kill her in the middle of this restaurant in front of everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
We were talking about this before, too. Most of Tarantino's movies employ very charming villains. Like, which is definitely, like, I think a cue inspired by, like, Hitchcock films. Because, like, his villains are always, like, Norman Bates, like, until you see him later in the film, like, wearing his dead mother's dress and wig and everything, and clearly going psycho, so to speak. He's a very charming, like, well-intentioned guy, for the most part. So, like, you look at Hans Landa in this, and then, of course, Bill in Kill Bill, like, David Carradine. And even Kurt Russell in Death Proof, like he looks rough, but Kurt Russell exudes, like, a natural charm. Like, I don't think he could be uncharming, like, if you just covered him in garbage and, like, let his hair and beard grow for, like, 3 years.
Yeah. Doesn't shower for 4 days.
Yeah, like, he would still be charming.
Right.
And DiCaprio in Django Unchained as well.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah.
He has a smoking jacket the entire time.
Yeah, and just, like... And
you
kind
of want to root for him, because you're like, man, look how well-dressed that guy is.
And even when he snaps towards the end, you're still like, oh, he's still a southern gentleman.
Yeah.
He's a racist person who almost bludgeoned a slave girl's head in. But, like,
He's we still, all make mistakes.
Yeah, yeah. And you do. Like, you almost defend some of these characters. Like, yeah. No, they're the bad guy. What am I saying?
That's exactly what I was doing during this movie. I was kind of rooting for Hans Landa.
Yeah.
Even though I was like, this is terrible. I shouldn't be rooting.
Like, but no, Hans Landa is a Nazi. I don't think there exists a single greater personification of a group of people that you're not allowed to like. and you're still, like, you're like, oh, man. Share a glass of milk with him. Because he is. Like, Christoph Waltz is just so disarmingly charming.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
He'd find out I'm Polish, like, right away. It'd be ruined.
No, but he wouldn't be mad at you for it.
No.
Well, this might... that speech he gives, too, in the beginning. You also get the idea that...
The rat speech, man.
Yeah, rat speech. You get the feeling he doesn't even care, like, that... Like, the Jews or the people he's carrying. It's a job to him.
Yeah.
Which, like, if the next day the Führer turned around and said, we're going to stop killing Jews now. Start killing, I don't know, like, corporate criminals or something.
He's very much the definition of a sociopath.
Yeah.
Like, the entire movie, he's doing everything for the benefit of himself. He's not necessarily serving the Nazis. He's serving the most advantageous thing for
himself.
Exactly. That's why he switches over at the end.
Yeah, and that... Oh,
he has
man.
No problem with it.
That was... Yeah, when he figures them out and captures them and, like, has them at that desk, I was like, where is this going? there's so few times, like, in a movie where, like... Like, Django, like, you know that Django is going to get out. Like, and it's going to be okay in the end, somehow. Like, this one, I'm honestly like, I don't think they're going to get to kill Hitler. Like, I mean, historically, I assume that, because that's not the way Hitler went out.
Yeah.
But
that
also,
was such a great money shot when he's machine-gunning his face.
Yeah, like, yeah. And it just looks like some, like, bad prosthetic from, like, a big horror movie. It's like, oh,
like
they
replaced his face with a water model.
Yeah, yeah.
Just paint it up, make it look pretty.
Yeah, but this movie
put a mustache
so...
on a water melon. Just
there you go. It's a Nazi melon now.
But yeah, like this Shoot movie, away. This movie is so good at the tension, and like, and again, in that basement scene, I did not expect Fassbender and Stiglitz to go down.
Yeah. I kind of wish Stiglitz didn't go down. He's one of my favorite
characters. I know, he's such a great character.
I love him so much.
And he's it sucks, cause, like, Stiglitz is the Boba Fett of this movie.
Like, awesome.
Well, it's this character that's built up as being, like, really cool and a total badass. And Crack, like, even did an article, like, because there's a bunch of movies that do that, where, like, they build up, like, this really great character.
Yeah.
And I think Stiglitz is actually on that list.
He gets his own, like,
credit, like, you see all these scenes of him, like, stabbing SS officers, like, and being a badass. And then, like, his contribution, like, in the present of the film is he shoots an SS officer in the balls with a fucking with a pistol before getting
somebody
gunned
else's
down.
Face.
Yes, yeah. So like
just
yeah,
over and over. He's not even going for a bunch of people. He's just stabbing
just
one person.
Just the one
in the
guy.
Face.
I was like, if you focused on, you know, the other five Nazis in that room, you guys might have actually made it out of there alive.
He doesn't want to get out alive. Though. He's just like, I'm going to teach this one person
he's
a
got
lesson,
death
a
wish.
Very brutal lesson.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was the one that was whipping him.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, I
don't know that they implied it too heavily. I mean, it's a possibility. But I also feel like if Tarantino wanted that to be the implication, you would have literally seen that.
Yeah, true.
I think it was him just having like some kind of PTSD.
I think it was just a general Nazi thing.
Yeah.
He went to Catholic school.
Because I feel like if he had been the one who'd done it, he would have figured them out sooner than that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Straight in the face.
Well, that's so weird that like that Stiglitz can go anywhere at all and just isn't immediately recognized as like,
yeah.
Oh, hey, remember the Nazi who turned on the Nazis? Why aren't there posters of this guy all over? Like,
let's get the
place.
Most notorious turncoat.
Yeah,
to be part of this big operation.
He was on the front page of every paper, but
yeah,
he's sneaky.
He's got a German accent. Put him in there. He's also a loose cannon, but
hey, he plays by his own rules, but he gets results. It's just like all good loose cannons. What's some of the other things we wanted to hit on?
What's your favorite character?
Favorite character? The cinema owner.
Shoshana?
Yeah, she's great.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's
great.
Like,
yeah.
Her building up, like, getting ready and all that, I was like, oh, yes, this is going to get wicked.
The war paint that she puts on before.
Yes!
Yeah, like she puts on the blush.
Yeah. Oh, Shoshana. Yeah. Yeah, she's phenomenal in this movie. And it's like, she's primarily, I think this was like her first like non-foreign film. And Tarantino's done that with a couple of people. Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of European actors in this movie, because, well, there needs to be.
For most of it, actually. And you don't really notice it either, but during the entire thing, they don't really speak English too often, which is very odd for a mainstream, like, Hollywood movie.
Like, well over half of it is spoken in German or French.
Or subtitled, yeah.
Yeah, which is very interesting. But it works, too. Like,
it doesn't distract or anything.
No, not at all.
It feels really natural.
And that's frustrating, because, like, this is the kind of movie that, like, people would bitch about. They're like, oh, I don't know why it's got to be subtitled. I don't like reading. It's like, fuck you. Then you don't like movies. What sense does it fucking make for people in France in the 40s to be speaking American?
Yeah, if you don't like reading subtitles, it's essentially cutting out 90% of the movies that are out there.
Yeah.
And just...
which is dumb.
Watching American movies.
Yeah, like, I guess that's great if you want to watch Jackass 3D and literally nothing else. Like, that's... yeah, to discount a movie for something like that is so stupid. It's like, you don't want to watch a movie because it sucks. I understand that. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
You don't want to watch a movie because it's 5 hours long. I understand that, too. I think my threshold is still, like, 3.5 hours. I don't think I've ever made myself watch, like, a single movie that exceeded that runtime.
Three and a half hours. What movie is that?
I want to say it was Seven Samurai.
Actually what I was gonna say.
Yeah, Seven Samurai is a fucking long one.
Yeah.
I actually, and that
there's an intermission built into the DVD too,
yeah,
which is really
interesting. Oh, and I took it.
It's like 10 minutes of that.
It's a great movie, but
it is
very long. But yeah, I certainly understand sometimes, and especially now, like movies. Like, they're not long because they need to be. They're long because studios feel this obligation to make them long, which is so pointless. Like, case in point, you look at, like, the Apatow films.
Yeah.
Like, they've just been getting unnecessarily longer.
For sure.
And, like, a lot of comedies now are like, oh, we can't be good if we're over 2 hours. Like, no, usually you're not good because you're over 2 hours.
No, I mean, I'm fine with long movies.
Oh, like, I am,
Judd Apatow, he could use an editor that tells him, hey, 30 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
You don't need the scenes with your daughters much in this movie.
Yeah, definitely. And like,
Girl in America's face all over again.
Yeah.
Judd Apatow.
So, I don't mind long movies either. Like, Tarantino's movies are, I would hesitate to call any of them modest by any stretch.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe like a Reservoir Dogs, I think that's the shortest of all that he's done. Because like, even we did Jackie Brown last week, like, I forgot that movie is over 2.5 hours long.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I've never seen it, so.
Oh, it's good. Yes. It doesn't feel like it, though. Like, I mean, it's paced very well, and most of his movies are.
Yeah, most of his movies don't drag.
Yeah. I think the only reason Django does is because it has, like, a false ending, essentially, where, like, you see, like, a logical ending point, and then it's like, just kidding, another 1/2 hour.
Let's get a big, like, shootout going.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, Dark Knight does it, but Dark Knight also, like, that was less of a, oh, man, it's another 1/2 hour. I was like, oh, man, I get more movie. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, it's I definitely understand the length thing, and some movies certainly could stand to step it down.
Sure.
Like, why is the new Transformers 3 hours?
Yeah.
Why? Just cut out the dialogue and just make it robots fighting, which is what you know you just want to do with that movie anyway.
No, but the denouement of the Transformers.
Oh, no.
Oh, get so rich.
We don't need no denouements. We don't need the mise-en-scene. We don't need none of that garbage.
Michael Bay makes really well-balanced films. Like, he knows his laws of symmetry when shooting. He knows how to cut a scene. He knows how to use subtlety in each frame. He's just very good at that.
Mm.
Dialogue is on point.
That's why he's where he is right now. I mean,
how could he not be?
I hate that nobody listening to this is going to be able to see what a ridiculous face you're making while you're saying these filthy lies to me. Anybody
I don't know what you're talking
anybody
about.
That's just hearing you say this thinks you're being sincere right now.
He is legitimately my favorite
you
director.
Stop it.
Right, it's Michael Bay.
He's an auteur. I mean,
oh my god, fuck the both of you guys.
It's Michael Bay, it's Fellini, and it's Kubrick.
Yeah.
And that's it. And everyone else drops down to the top.
Hold on.
I gotta throw Tim Burton in there, though.
Hold on. Kubrick before McGee?
Because everything's so wacky.
So
unnecessary doves.
No, that's John Woo.
That's also in Charlie's Angels, though. He borrowed from John Woo.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's very much lifted from John Woo movies.
Directly.
Mission Impossible 2, Face Off. The whole two guns whilst
jumping. Is that McGee? Mission Impossible? Is that McGee?
No. Mission Impossible 2 is actually John Woo. As his Face Off.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I need to check those movies out, though, because I've never seen Face Off. I've never seen Mission
Impossible. Oh, Face Off is so fun.
Yeah.
Face Off is... Face Off's a great time.
Like in a ridiculous way or a legitimate way?
It's a ridiculous. Okay. It's a very ridiculous fun. Well, oh man, that's good. Me and Sumac have been trying to find somebody who hasn't seen Face Off.
So, really?
We'll have to keep that in mind. It's fun.
I'm in that boat too.
Oh man.
How have I not seen that?
Mission Impossible 2 was just very silly though.
But, we make a podcast called How Have I Not Seen That and just talk about how I haven't seen This is a movie I haven't seen but not watching. Still not watching.
See, Mike was frozen in ice back in 1930.
I have a VHS player and I can't find copies of Inglorious Bastards.
Nor will you. Last movie released on VHS was A History of Violence.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Complete last movie, like not
the absolute last movie that was ever released on VHS, as far as a commercial release.
Okay, I was about to say, I feel like there's some way that's still doing that, like a hipster that's making VHS.
Oh, probably. Of like their shitty bands, like fucking
still do
keyboard-driven rock.
I know that.
Well, yeah, cassette tapes make sense. That's more of a cost thing because it's cheaper to put out an album on cassette than it is to put it out on vinyl.
Which I'm kind of into. I like cassettes.
I think sets are cool as long as you have the means to play them.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's more expensive to put out something on a cassette than it is a DVD.
I mean, just find a car with a cassette player. That's simple. Just sell your car that you have now with the CD player and get the cassette player.
I don't have a car at all right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Just go get a used $200 cassette playing car just so you can play your cassettes.
Just get a Walkman.
Oh, man, I really want to listen to Huey Lewis in the news.
I can't afford
top
to.
Yep.
I pay about $200 a month to listen to Huey Lewis in the news.
It's a subscription fee. It's my car payment. I don't even drive it. I literally just make the payment so I can listen to cassettes. Oh man, we strayed a little. Let's get back on. I want to talk more about the scene in the basement. That scene is so fucking good.
Yeah.
And I forgot that Fassbender was in this after the very first time I saw it.
I did too, actually.
And Fassbender, oh my god.
That was before he got like really
deep. Yeah, that was before like he blew up.
Yeah.
God, man, Fassbender, yeah. So fucking good in this movie. Like, he's so great. Like, and just the tension in that scene.
Yeah.
And like 70% of his dialogue is in German too, which I'd kind of forgotten about as well.
Yeah.
Because like we're introduced to him, like he's British, like he's meeting with Mike Myers of all people. Which, like, I read the thing, like, and
it surprisingly didn't distract from anything when Mike Myers was there.
Well, because he plays it like relatively straight. I remember reading like he asked Tarantino about being in it because his parents were members of I think it was like the British SAS or something.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's like a history there, but yeah, like it's very restrained, like very very grounded.
Yeah.
When you consider
he's
that
not putting
only
on like a Shrek voice or anything.
Yeah. Well, when you consider that like a year before he had been in The Love Guru.
So, oh man, I forgot about that too.
So yeah, like so it was great to see him in like a live action film where he wasn't playing like a racist caricature of something.
Actually, I kind of wish people would use him more because he does have a lot of versatility with his accents. And
he
his
does.
Characters.
Like it, yeah, it's just he's been in a lot of dog shit movies over the last decade.
True.
Was Inglourious Basterds a spinoff of Austin Powers? Because he was frozen.
Okay.
No,
it's
40s.
It's Fat Bastards, then it's Inglourious
Bastards.
He got his own movie, and it's good.
That's pretty interesting fan theory.
Somebody's written it. Written fan fiction about it. It gets really dirty.
Well, I think all fan fiction does.
No, it's really dirty.
But like, there's a whole lot of, like we mentioned, like the tension in that basement scene is completely different than the tension up top. Like, it's also interesting to look at because I noticed this with the Kill Bills when we did them. It was like there aren't, like, for as long as this movie is, realistically, it's like 9 or 10 different scenes. Which is insane, because, like, you've got, like, the opening at the farmhouse, which is a good chunk. Mm-hmm. Then, of course, you meet the bastards.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, a recounting of the story. And then, I guess, the
Hitler
French cinema and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just, yeah, like, it's, but it's, like, a more, like, a movie by somebody else, there'd be, like, 50 different scenes, like, to comprise a movie of this length.
Yeah.
And it's, like, 6 chapters or whatever it was. So, it's, yeah, it's interesting to see, like, and even when it's, like, over more than, like, one location, like, it still can find a central area, like, Shoshana's Theater and then, like, that restaurant, like, which is in the vicinity of that. Like, it's still, like, thematically, it's still very much tied, like, with the characters.
It's not, there's no, like, transitionary, like, going room to room to room or anything like that. It's very much like a play, almost.
Yeah. And it's...
where it's like, this set just changed, now we're in a new set, mm-hmm. with new characters, here you go, and go.
Yeah,
and it's slowly, static,
like,
yeah.
Slowly poking, like, okay, how's it going to get messed up here? Oh, wait, they're almost away with it! No, they're gonna get...
The
pressure of it, like, mm-hmm. it's like a sloth, like, trying to reach one thing.
Yeah.
No, the tension in this scene is very different from the first one, because it's kind of like a roller coaster in a way, with the tension. Like, it's goes up in tension, goes back down, you're like, oh, they're going to be okay. Then it goes back up higher than that point.
Yeah.
Down again. When the first one is just, like, a gradual incline. With tension throughout until it burst forth at the very end.
Yeah. I love to, when I saw this, when we watched it this time, or when you saw it for the first time even, did you guys know that he'd blown his cover when he held up his 3 fingers the way he did?
The first time I saw it, no.
Okay.
Did you?
Yeah, I did not know that.
I did.
Yeah.
Because at the time...
they do kind of change the focus, so it's like, why is that?
Yeah, like, definitely, like, and I feel like it's implied there, and they do a good job of conveying that something's wrong, even if you're not familiar with that.
Yeah.
I was dating a girl at the time. We'd been dating for a couple of years, and she'd done a semester in Germany. So I knew, like, she told me all this stuff about, like, German culture, and about, like, how they, like, they prost when they drink and all that stuff. And she told me, like, the 3-finger thing. And how, like, that, like, a German would count, like, 1 and, like, start with the thumb, and, like, as opposed to, like, using the middle 3 fingers to signify that. Or even, like, you know, you would use the thumb and 4-finger if you were counting 2.
Mm.
So, I saw it, and I was like, oh, fuck.
Mm.
Just, like, Tarantino has to know that, like, this has to be on purpose, right, that he's doing that. And then I looked at the German soldier, like, and me and my girlfriend at the time, like, we both looked at each other, because, like, she knew. And then I looked, and she... and I was like, oh no. Like, the German guy knows, right? She's like, oh, I hope so, because he fucked it up. I was like, I know, right? I remember you telling me that. I pay attention to things. I'm a good boyfriend sometimes. So, yeah, like, so it was really cool, like, to see something like that. And it is. Like, it's, unless you're super familiar with German culture, why the fuck would you know that as a casual person watching it?
Yeah.
But, like, but the way that that's shot, like, you even see, like, the look on August Diehl's character's face. Like, you see the look of the German officer, like, just drop. Because, like, he's been joking and everything, and they're almost out, and then he's like, nope. Someone's not walking out of this fucking basement alive now.
Yeah, and that's actually brilliantly written.
Yeah.
Because it has to be something that's small enough where general officers won't think about a small detail like that when they're getting briefed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a small slip-up like that where you can't just... open up a book and go, like, okay, this is what we should do. It's
exactly.
Something where you have to actually be in the culture to understand.
Yeah, like, because, mm-hmm. Like, everything, because, like, a lot of it, like, he's drawing on his knowledge of German cinema,
mm-hmm.
like, to explain, like, his accent and everything, and I was like, wow, that's pretty good. But then, yeah, why would he know the fucking 3-finger thing?
Yeah.
Like, what, there's no reason he would know that unless he'd spent some time living there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, that's a great detail to catch him up. And I like that it's not even explained until the following scene.
Yeah.
Because, like, the officer, like, all he just straight up looking at is like, you've tipped your hand, like, you've given yourself away.
Yeah.
And then Von Hammersmark explains it the next time, like, as far as, like, how he blew his cover.
Mm-hmm.
God, yeah, it's so fucking good. And then like, Fassbender, like, just resigns himself to it. And, like, just, like, lights up and says, like, Oh, do you mind if I go out speaking to the kids? It's like, oh god, how badass is Michael Fassbender?
That's one thing that I'm not too big on, actually, is his accent.
Yeah.
Like, his English accent in it that he uses, I'm not a big fan of it. I don't know why. It's just, like, kind of cartoony to me.
It definitely, it's very broad, but I also, like, I think it makes sense, like, because it's such a stark contrast to the Germany is doing.
Yeah.
Because Fassbender, he's an Irish-German.
Right. Yeah.
Actor. So, like, it makes sense, like, his German sounds pretty natural for the most part. But that, yeah, like, I like that his British sounds like the way we would do a British accent if we were making fun of somebody.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's very Victorian.
Yeah.
Over enunciated.
Oh, sorry, old bean. it's like the butler in a movie that, like, is just derisive to everybody who's lower in class. I think it works. Like, I could see how it would draw some people out, but I just was like, nah, this makes sense.
But I mean, I did like that whenever he was kind of like put in a corner, when like the officer would ask him questions about who he is and where he's from, and he would use examples from his briefing, like the filmmakers.
Have
you seen this film?
Then
you've
seen
by the way, this director, just to build up confidence.
Yeah.
It's like something a bad actor would do, kind of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, use the most basic thing to try to integrate yourself as an officer.
Yep. So, I saw
movies. All I know is movies. I don't know.
Have you ever seen E.T.? You know, some of the guys had guns, but then they had walkie-talkies? Yeah, I know what's up.
You know, like Reese's Pieces from E.T.
Yeah.
I'm an expert on that shit.
Guys, have you ever, like, sat in the basket of a bicycle and then flown? Like, I'm a German soldier, just like you guys, you know? I ride my bicycle same way as you do. One pass in front of the moonlight at a time.
I put on my bike 2 tires at a time.
Oh, man. I love, like, accents is such a huge part of this movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's how they're tipped off in that... And then, like the whole missionary said, like, Germans have, like, this keen ear, which plays very much into Hans Landa's earlier thing about how, like, Nazis view themselves as hawks, like, these predatory, like, very hyper-aware animals. So it's fucking amazing in the theater scene to just see Brad Pitt and Eli Roth and Omar Doom just speaking just the worst Italian accents.
Omar Doom was the best.
Yeah, he was somehow the best one too. And that's what I love too, is like, I don't speak any Italian. I was like, that's why you're third. And then he speaks it the best. Like, oh man.
That's such a great character choice by Brad Pitt, by the way, not trying to change his accent with
Buongiorno. That's so good.
That was a brilliant acting choice.
Like, I'm almost bummed that Brad Pitt isn't in this movie more than he is.
Really? Because
it's a great character, and it's one of those ones, like, because, like, Brad Pitt, like, he's great in a movie like Snatch, where he's playing, like, a very broad, like, fully realized character. And Aldo Raine is very much the same thing, too, because usually when you see Brad Pitt in a movie, for the most part, he's always interesting, but he's usually, like, a very vanilla, like, very... like Brad Pitt looking sounding kind of guy. So to get him doing like Aldo Raine, like this dude from fucking this bootlegger from Tennessee who
with like lynching scars.
Which was fucking great. So like to see a character like that, but then like to get so little of him. And it's the same thing with like Hugo Stiglitz too.
There's a lot of great characters, and I feel like as much as I want some of these characters to have more screen time, I feel like it's a good choice to reduce it a little bit.
And the movie definitely worked for it. Like, and I could be completely off my mark, and more Aldo might have ruined the pacing. But it's just like I like Brad Pitt in this movie.
Yeah,
and I love when like a character like an actor like Brad Pitt gets a character like this in a Tarantino film, and then like you only get so much of it. So, like you kind of want more, which I guess is the good thing to do.
Yeah.
So.
Actually, after this movie, like, that's all I could hear out of Brad Pitt. Like, with his later movies,
I
can only hear that voice when he's playing other characters. Like, 12 Years a Slave. Did you see that?
I have not. He's in that?
He's briefly, but he does, like, a similar voice to it, and that's all I saw was Aldo in that role. And I was like, oh, God, I can't get that character out of my head.
Maybe he's Aldo Raine's daddy in that movie.
Maybe.
movie.
You see him and killing him softly. Ah, fuck you, pay me.
Yeah. Which, that's a movie that's underrated, I feel
like. Oh, that's a great movie.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely, it's a slow burn of a movie, too.
Sure.
But, like, it's very effective, and especially, like, just that final moment, like, that monologue from him to Richard Jenkins is so goddamn good.
Yeah.
Cool. Is there anything else you guys wanted to hit on before we wrap it up? Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know. You want to wrap it up, though, right?
No, we can get, if you've got something else, by all means,
yeah,
hit on it.
I mean, Eli Roth.
Yeah.
How do you guys feel about him as the Bear Jew?
I thought he was good. I think they definitely, like, gave us just enough of him to keep him believable in that role. Like, every time he talked,
yeah,
I was just like, oh, man, he does not sound as intimidating as he looks
in
that first scene.
Definitely not.
He kind of peaks at that first one.
Especially after he uses the baseball bat with his, like, over-the-top, like, baseball commentary. Like, his voice didn't do
It definitely didn't fit, but, like, But when you first hear that tapping in that down that corridor, and then you just see him step out, I was like, oh my god, like, this would be terrifying to be in line for this fucking thing. But then he's just like, nah, I knocked it out of the park. It's me, Donny Donowitz, the Banjo.
I kind of wanted Quentin Tarantino to say, all right, pull it back a little bit. Let's do another take of that. Not do it so.
Either I was like, no, Quentin, the first. I'm the one take machine gun, man.
But they were hinting that Adam Sandler.
Yeah, because Tarantino offered him the role.
And I feel like I would have preferred Adam Sandler in that role a little bit more.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too. Like, Adam Sandler is actually a good dramatic actor, too.
He has more subtle anger to him.
Eli
Roth is very...
very over the top.
And outward with it, and not,
like,
subtle at all.
I enjoy Eli Roth's movies, but, like, even when he has a cameo, and it's like, all right, dude, dial it down just a tad. Like, even if something like Cabin Fever, where he's just, like, a stoner backpacker, it's like, all right, buddy,
obvious about this.
Yeah,
we know what you are.
Pump the brakes, all right? Let fucking Ryder Strong have his time in the sun in this fucking movie, alright? It's been a while since Boy Meets World. Let him have this.
Get his.
Yeah. Let that fucking kid from Detroit Rock City movie have his moment.
Let the foreign exchange show from Not Another Teen Movie get some lines.
Yeah. Oh, man. Can't believe it.
You need more Sam Levine.
Yeah, I was so shocked at Sam. I don't even think... he has a line, maybe?
Yeah. Well, actually, though, in the original cut, he had a lot more lines, but they just cut a lot of it. Like, in the end, like, it showed him and, I think, Paul Rust, maybe.
Yeah.
Because Paul Rust was part of it.
Yeah.
And they just completely cut those out. Like, apparently he had, like, maybe, like, 10 more minutes of screen time.
Yeah. That's such a bummer. I got so excited when I saw Sam Levine was attached to this, so I was like... oh, man, like, how is this going to play
out?
That's
the reason I watched the movie was him and Paul Rust.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is, like...
a good rock.
Sam Levine, I can't not picture Sam Levine without obviously thinking of him in Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, to see him, like, and then to see him shoot a Nazi in the back.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, I want more of this character. And then I was like, nope. Mm. But, like, it was the same thing with BJ Novak, too.
Mm.
Like, he doesn't do shit until, like, that final scene,
really.
And, like, and he gets indignant, and then he just agrees without a rein for the last couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, would you say that's about right? Oh, yeah, I'd say it's about right. You agree with BJ Novak? Oh, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think his knife looks pretty cool? Oh, yeah, it's a cool-looking knife. It'd
be great if you just, like, broke the fourth wall.
Just looked at the camera and started...
this is pretty crazy, right, guys?
Yeah.
Jell-O
how
molds.
They do
Stapler and a Jell-O.
Yep. Yep. Mindy Kaling, we did on the show.
Actually, Sam Levine is in another scene with Hitler. He's like the painter that's doing the mural in the background.
Oh,
in his study, and I just found that out today. Actually,
like as that character,
as the painter, yeah. Like, there's no lines or anything. He's just a background character painting a mural.
Okay, so but he's not. So it's a separate role, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not his character, but it's a different character.
Okay, that's
why
I was confused. I was like, why would one of the bastards have infiltrated to that point and then not kill Hitler?
Because he's got to make a buck. He's got to paint.
Yeah.
Side job.
It's a living.
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
That's it.
Maybe next time.
Glorious Bastards 2. This time Sam Levine made the cut.
Paul Rust is Brad Pitt's character.
Which one was Paul Rust?
He doesn't really have any lines in it, actually. You can just hear his laugh in the woods scene.
You can see his nose.
And you can see his nose.
Okay.
He's like... He's the one in the middle in the lineup, I guess.
Yeah.
All right.
He doesn't really do too much, which I was disappointed in.
Paul Rust. Marsha.
Well, of course we're pulling for him, but he's...
Yeah. You gotta pull for Paul Rust.
Why? You know he got out of it alive, at least.
Yeah, I think he did, actually. Him and Sam Levine both did.
No, they had to have.
Yeah.
They just stopped mentioning them.
They don't get killed in the theater, and they don't get killed in the basement, so...
No.
What do we do, boss? Sit tight.
Great. Yeah, just hang tight. Play solitaire or whatever.
They start the band.
Two-person solitaire.
Yep. Oh, man. Mm. Nice. Is there anything else you wanted to hit on before we wrap up, then?
No.
All right, what I'd like to do to close it out, we go around. Favorite moment or scene from the movie?
Favorite moment or scene?
Yeah.
Are you start, though?
You go. I'm going to agree with you.
You're going to make me start? You're going to switch it on here? I should have told you guys up top. I think, for me, it's between that very first scene in the basement.
Sure.
Like, those two, like, every time I think about this movie, like, those are the scenes that I think of. Like, just because, again, like, they're directed very well. They're both very tense, but they're two very different, like, scenes as far as, like, the tonal shifts. And especially because in the basement, like, the control shift, like, the status shifts back and forth between August Steele and Fassbender's characters so many times in their conversation.
Mm.
And, like, yeah, it's interesting. And then, of course, that first one just... That's my introduction, and that's I feel like that's
level.
Most people's introduction
to
Christoph Waltz is that scene, and if you're not sold on Christoph Waltz in that scene, you're not going to be sold on Christoph Waltz ever.
And I don't think I've run into anybody who wasn't sold on that scene.
Yeah,
honestly.
That scene's fucking phenomenal. Like, and like I said, like I think this is the most captivating opening of any Tarantino film that he's done so far. I think he definitely has the capability to top it, but he set the bar very fucking high with this opening.
For sure.
I would go the image where the screen starts burning, that one kind of sticks mine, because what is her name?
Shoshana.
Yeah. She's like the most tragic character, and that's just a beautiful image to me.
Like
where it's like, oh, it's happening, her revenge, but she's not.
When like the screen burns and you can still see her face and like
ghosting.
That sticks
like that Wizard of Oz projection.
Love that. I love that scene too, actually. I love that, the burning of the film stock, but I also love the shooting scene between her and
Frederick Zoller.
I like, this is gonna sound weird, I guess, but I do like when she gets shot, because that's a really, really good shot. With like the slow motion fall.
Well, yeah, it's like you were saying earlier, like that kind of like violent but very prettily shot scenes.
I like that a lot. And I mean, I guess I have to agree with you with the first scene too. Like, that's a great scene. Those are my top two.
Solid scene. Yeah. Alright, cool. I think we're gonna wrap it up there then.
Sure.
Thank you, Nathan, for guest hosting.
Yeah, thank you,
Mike,
for having me.
Thanks for being a guest on the show.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.